Thanks for downloading Friday Night Comedy from BBC Radio 4. If you want to find out more, visit the Radio 4 website. But not before you listen to this week's Now Show. It's called Topical for a reason, you know.
Hello, I'm Steve Punce.
I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are John Holmes, Rich Hall, Laura Shavin, Vicky Stone and Mitch Benn. Nous sommes Charlie and this is... So, in a week when the tragedy in France was all about what you can and you can't laugh at, it turns out there are some things that you just can't laugh at. So, we'll move on to some lighter stories, Hugh.
The world economy is about to collapse.
Yes, and the big question, really, is who first suggested to OPEC that they should hold a January sale?
Yes, oil supplies must go. This barrel of Brent crude is down to just $49. That's less than half it was last summer. Vladimir Putin says...
I am get you for this.
And the leader of the Scottish National Party says...
Oh, thank God we lost the referendum, eh? Hang on, is this microphone on?
And the chief executive of this US fracking company says...
Dagnabbit, I'm out of business.
So get on down to the great OPEC sale. You can't buy oil for less. If you find it cheaper anywhere, we'll match the price and drive them...
out of business.
Because that's the point. That's OPEC price.
Yes, and... by Wednesday, Brent crude, the benchmark for world oil prices, had fallen to $49.92 a barrel, disappointing traders in Amsterdam's spot market as they tried really hard to get the meter to stop exactly on 50.00. 6 months ago, Brent traded at $115 a barrel.
So prices have more than halved, which either means something's up or Lidl have started selling crude oil. Apart from anything else, if that trend continues, by this summer it will be completely free and petrol stations will have to change their business model.
Yeah, can I get a set of tumblers, please, 200 Nectar points, and a Twix, please?
Are you collecting the free fuel?
No, I'm fine, thanks.
The trouble with oil prices is that whatever they do, the media react the same way. If they go down...
oil price drop, panic.
If they go up...
oil price rise, panic.
They stay the same...
oil price stagnation, panic.
It's a continual state of constant panic. It's a bit like being Prince Andrew's PR advisor. Because, of course, by January the 2nd, it was already a very happy new year for tabloid news editors. It was quite literally a dream come true.
Are you all right, darling?
Extraordinary. I just dreamt that I was able to use the words underage, Maxwell, paedophile, yacht, royal billionaire and sex slave all in the same headline.
Yes, perhaps you should turn the radio on.
And he then spent the rest of the week happily singing to himself.
By the last day of Christmas, good fortune sent to me. 6 days of headlines, 5 juicy pages, 4 palace spokesman, 3 friends of Savile, 2 dead celebs.
And a pedo linked to royalty.
Except, of course, it was all denied.
Denying things is an essential art in public life, and the vocabulary of the denial is well established. You've got many options to choose from. There's the basic denial.
It didn't happen.
The emphatic denial.
It didn't happen.
The carefully worded denial.
I have no recollection of this happening.
The even more carefully worded denial.
I categorically have no recollection of this happening.
Both much used by politicians, as is, of course, the political denial.
This may have happened under the last Labour government. But we have put measures in place to ensure it can never happen again.
And even more effective, the change the subject denial.
Whether or not this happened is a side issue compared with what's going on in the health service. Why aren't we talking about that?
Denial aimed at younger voters.
This so totally didn't happen.
Denial aimed at older voters.
This didn't happen in the 1950s before mass immigration changed our way of life.
The rich person's denial?
Say that happened and I'll sue you.
The poor person's denial?
Look, that really...
Don't bother, we know full well you're guilty. In the United States, of course, they tend to prefer to admit things using the all-purpose get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yes, this did happen. And I lied to you all. Because Satan entered my heart.
And now I found Jesus.
But there are plenty of historical examples. The 1992 Buckingham Palace denial.
Rumours of problems in Charles and Diana's marriage are categorically not true.
And of course, 10 years later, denial was raised to an art form by the master himself.
The evidence for weapons of mass destruction is clear.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, I know, but I'm in denial.
And so, after many, many denials, Andrew returned from a holiday and had to phone the Queen, who, as usual, purred down the phone at him.
Hello, Mummy.
Certainties are already being shattered this year. A couple of years ago, we were assured oil prices would never fall much again because it's a dwindling resource.
We were assured that the royal family had regained its image.
And now it turns out we can't even rely on our elections being a month of arguing between the two main parties. No, this time round, thanks to the Fixed Parliaments Act, all the fun of guessing when it's going to be has gone and been replaced by endless months and months of tedious campaigning.
Although, fortunately, of different types. The Tories are going for posters, while Ed Miliband said that he wants to have
4 million conversations
on the doorstep, which is interesting, particularly since there are 46 million registered voters. So clearly, 91% of us don't matter. Saying you want to have 4 million conversations is like saying,
unless you live in a marginal seat, we don't give a stuff.
But hey, we had our chance to change the voting system. We said no. To be honest, with 4 million doorstep conversations going on, it's the future of the knock-knock joke that I'm worried about.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Ed Miliband.
Pretend we're out. Given that people generally don't like cold callers, possibly security companies will be spotting a new market.
Fed up with Labour Party nuisance callers hanging around your property? Take steps to protect yourself with our range of devices. Install this large St George flag over your window in combination with this realistic-looking white van outside the house. Watch them cower away in fear. If that doesn't work, affix our special Labour repellent sign to your gate in durable laminate. It reads, "Beware, bacon sandwich inside."
So, Tories going for media coverage, Labour for doorstepping. The Lib Dems, of course, are going to be using a website. Jobcentre.co.uk, I think, probably. Finally, what about Nigel Farage? Well, he's having a dry January. Yes, for 1 month, he's given up alcohol.
Or as UKIP call it, policy juice.
Which gives him a major problem. The problem being, what on earth is he going to have in his hand for photographs? Because that pint glass is permanently there, you know. His hand is actually in that shape, like a Lego minifigure. He has to have the glass surgically removed, so he's gone to A&E.
Which is why we won't see him till February.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Foreign news now. Please welcome to the Now Show, Mr. Rich Hall.
Great. Jeb Bush is considering running for president of the United States. Let me repeat that. Yet another member of the Bush clan is pining to spend his days walking to the White House carrying nuclear launch codes in a bucket. Let's examine this in an analogous perspective. I would now like to do my impression of the actor Alec Baldwin in the film Glengarry Glen Ross. You loser. You child. Who told you you could work with men? ABC. Always be closing.
What the hell was that? That is the worst Baldwin impression I've ever seen in my life. Let's hope we never have to hear another Baldwin impression.
I would now like to do my impression of the actor Billy Baldwin in Slipper. Pearl Jam? I thought that was a sexual device.
Are you kidding me? Oh, that was 10 times worse than the other Baldwin impression. The only thing that could be even worse if we had to hear that twice.
But now I can do my impression of the actor Stephen Baldwin in Flintstones 3, Rock of Ages.
Hey, Fred, how could you lose Wilma's bracelet? You don't even know the combination to your own bowling locker.
This is some kind of weird avant-garde subversive attempt to make fun of the Bush family by making an oblique reference to some acting brothers. I get it. I've seen it before.
I'm caught up now. That crap might work in a Berlin cabaret, but that don't work on radio, people. A long walk. It just illustrates my point of the law of diminishing returns. Jeb Bush, the middle brother, the Hoss Cartwright of the Pinhead Ponderosa. It's happening, and we're letting it happen. That is the level of cynicism and resignation that America has fallen to. We've had hepatitis A and hepatitis B. Let's give old hepatitis C a shot. There seems to be some implied insane idea amongst the Bush family that every one of their offspring is somehow ordained to be a president. You know what? Just because George Sr. kept shooting his Texas barbecue sourdough sauce into Barbara's Oval Office and another Bush popped out like some kind of self-rising biscuit doesn't mean it's destiny. That's just bad family planning. Never underestimate America's ability to pick the wrong man for the job. See, Jeb's campaign advisor will be banking on the fact that people will elect him purely out of brand recognition. But people voted for George Bush, and then they voted for George Bush Jr. Why wouldn't they vote for Jeb Bush? I'll tell you why. Because electing the president is not the same as buying a book on Amazon. The newspapers and the media are drooling over the idea of a Bush-Clinton rematch, which has nothing to do with qualifications or character. It's just two recognizable names. It's a novelty, a sequel. You know, there's plenty of quality films out there, but Americans love a sequel. That's why they'll go out and watch Liam Neeson in Taken 3, even though it's the same stupid story over and over. The message is the same for Liam as it is for Barbara Bush. Stop letting your family out of the house.
Please welcome from the future, Vicky Stone.
So, here we are in 2015, which is, of course, the year that they go forward to in the seminal 1985 film Back to the Future 2. And come January the 1st, my Facebook timeline was brim full of imagination-bereft renter statuses referencing the film and lamenting on the lack of hoverboards in our everyday lives. Now, you'll notice that there's music accompanying this, and I'm playing it live on a keytar, a keyboard that you wear like a guitar. We are living in the future, and nothing says we're in the future better than synth. Now, I don't mean to be a horrible show-off after I've just dropped the K-bomb, but I own a Roomba. For those of you that don't know, a Roomba is a robot hoover. A robot hoover! Who wants a hoverboard when you can have a vacuum cleaner that instead of hoovering your house decides to pick a fight with a half-dead pot plant and doesn't win? I've also got a fridge that you can text. I've got a screwdriver that's also a magnet, that's also a torch. And the things that you can do with a probe these days. Oh, come on, you're better than that. I meant that we're landing probes on comets. And in the news this week, it's revealed that they're even planning to plant salad on the red planet. Is there lettuce on Mars? Would have made a very different Bowie song. So, what if the Back to the Future 2015 scene had been realistic, with every citizen staring into a smartphone as they walked along? Because nowadays, everything we buy, everything we cook, bake, microwave and wear is proudly displayed on our Facebook timelines for all to see, peacocking every culinary success like a trotting show dog. Look at these cupcakes I made! Don't you just want to be me? Sort your life and look at how impressive mine is. I mean, if you bake cupcakes and you don't Instagram them, then why would you even bake them? Would I swap this future with its Wi-Fi fridges and Instagram cupcakes for one that contained a hoverboard? Yes, I would, but then I'm the sort of person who owns a keter. Thank you.
Yeah, Back to the Future was released in 1985, but something else rather important happened in that year too.
Yes, almost exactly 30 years ago, this very week, the son of Ernest Harrison, the then chairman of Vodafone, drove to Parliament Square on New Year's Day and called his father, thus making Britain's first ever mobile phone call.
Dad, hi, it works, Dad, it works!
Yes. I'll get your mother.
On the way back, of course, he sat on the phone, thus making Britain's second, third, fourth and fifth mobile phone calls. And then the phone rang and he received Britain's first ever incoming mobile phone call.
According to our records, you can claim for missold PPI.
By next morning, the security services had set up Britain's first mobile phone call recording device. And at lunchtime, the first public phone call was made. By Ernie Wise.
Yep, at this point, 100% of mobile calls made in Britain had involved someone called Ernest. Ernie was dressed bizarrely in Victorian garb to look like Alexander Graham Bell. He made a call to the chairman of Vodafone, followed by one to his agent to fire him.
Ernie, of course, remarked on how crystal clear the reception was, which is amazing, actually, because if you call the chairman of Vodafone today and ask when they're going to pay the tax they avoided, the call mysteriously cuts out. It's worth remembering, of course, that this was only the first civilian mobile call. Just as with GPS and the internet, the military had had mobile technology for years.
Hello? Yeah, I'm in the tank. No, in the tank. Now you have to speak up because we're going through a narrow defile. What? 2 pints of milk? Okay, roger that. I'll pick it up on the way home.
Nowadays, according to recent research, making phone calls is actually only 6th on the list of things people do on their mobile phone.
Phone calls increasingly feel like the equivalent of semaphore signals. But in other areas, antique old-style stuff is cool again. Typewriters are in, vinyl albums are in again. And Mark Zuckerberg, zillionaire founder of Facebook, has recently discovered a piece of analog technology that he is raving about. Yep, he has discovered books. On a New Year blog, he wrote...
Books allow you to fully explore a topic and immerse yourself in a deeper way than most media today.
Well, thank you for that, Mark. I haven't read the rest of his blog, but I imagine it goes on.
Toasters allow you to recook bread to give it a more crisp surface than most heat sources today.
Life is just one big process of discovery for our Mark.
I have discovered an excellent snack which can be readily constructed to eat while social networking. Simply take 2 slices of bread and insert a piece of meat or cheese between them together with leaves or dressings of your choice. I call this a Zuckerberg. And I intend to roll this idea out worldwide. The bread and filling based snack called the Winklevoss is a pure coincidence.
I still hope that Mark is right about books, though. I must bear it in mind tonight when I'm listening to Radio 4's Snapchat at bedtime.
Of course, going the other way on technology is none other than Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, which has, for the first time, offered the option of sending queries about your tax form by tweet. Now, quite what you can ask them in 140 characters is not very clear. There are page numbers on the tax form that are more than 140 characters. And apparently most of the tweets simply go,
"Hi there, any chance of you answering the phone? Hashtag holding music."
Although the service is proving useful for some celebrity tweeters.
"Loving it here in the Cayman Islands. Better luck next year, guys."
Said at Gary Barlow. Retweeted by at Jimmy Carr and, ironically, by the chairman of Vodafone.
HMRC also published its annual list of the worst excuses made for late payment or filing of a tax return.
"I fell in with the wrong crowd,"
said another member of Take That. Some of them are a bit weird.
"I've been busy looking after a flock of escaped parrots and some fox cubs."
Some of them are a bit dull.
"I work colleague borrowed my tax return to photocopy it and didn't give it back."
Other possible excuses include...
We're Starbucks.
And of course, the classic.
Well, the Chancellor told me at supper that it wouldn't be a problem.
Tweeted in from Parliament Square by the chairman of Vodafone.
Thank you very much.
And now a man whose New Year's resolution was to get more exercise, but he's already given up because the wheel has come off the wall of his little cage. Would you please welcome John Hall?
Thank you very much. Thank you. Yes, Prince Andrew, then. Well, how awful for him having to put up with that. I had to read about it in the papers, hear it on television. So embarrassing. His own mother making slightly awkward references to Game of Thrones in her speech on Christmas Day. Anyway, in other news, let us not forget that according to the latest figures, the frightening epidemic that we've all been hearing about is becoming an even greater threat.
What is unclear is how we stop the largest outbreak the world has ever seen.
The numbers were bigger than we anticipated, and then it didn't stop.
It's progressing at an amazing rate.
I mean, literally, you can't escape from it.
The outbreak has got worse.
You cannot escape it. Everybody succumbs in the end.
It is a pandemic. It is everywhere. It's very real. And if it hasn't already, it could affect someone that you know. I'm talking about bloody Frozen. Let it go, let it go. It's an epidemic of Frozen. If you're unfamiliar with the film Frozen, allow me to elucidate. Basically, it is the story of a red-haired, slightly cross-eyed girl, a bloke, a snowman called Olaf. He looks a bit like Alex Salmond, only more human. And together in the snow, they appear to visit the top of the Shard on an unusually quiet day to try and find her estranged sister, who is almost identical in that she's also a bit cross-eyed and also has way overdone the 5-2 diet. The sister is blonde. She's got some kind of degenerative disease. And then... well, then there's a prince who is actually a villain, or at least is accused of being one, over something that might once have happened when he stayed on an American businessman's private Caribbean island. Though, to be honest, I'm not sure that's the exact plot of Frozen, as I fell asleep and woke up during the news, so I may have confused the two. Frozen is like catnip to kids. It lures them in. Basically, all you need to know is that Frozen is the child catcher in cartoon form, right? Put it near a child and they are completely ensnared by it, pulled in and captured by its big, doughy-eyed, disproportionate waist-sized princessy net. Whatever they're doing, no matter how badly a child might be behaving, Frozen is the ultimate weapon.
What an excellent day for an exorcism. She's in here with that cat, that's your mother.
Deliver us from evil.
She's in here with that cat, that's the sour's mine. She's mine, you faceless slime.
Let it go, let it go. The power of Christ compels you to let it go.
It burns, it burns.
It stops them dead is what it does. I've got two girls, right? They're 4 and 2 years old. In our house, right, because of that, what we did for Christmas this year was what everyone else with similarly aged children did as well. And that was to single-handedly keep Disney financially afloat by going out to own anything and everything to do with Frozen. I mean, look, like you probably, I understand movie merchandise, I get it, but this is now on the next level. There are Frozen umbrellas, Frozen duvet covers, Frozen dresses, Frozen cutlery, Frozen car shampoo I've seen, Frozen dog shampoo... Frozen loom bands. I don't even know what they are. Something to do with textile manufacture during the Industrial Revolution. There are Princess Elsa Frozen online makeup tutorials. They're 4 and 2 years old. And then, in casting my angry eye, right, my angry eye over the mountains of Frozen merchandise online, I came across the most hideous mashup of infuriating marketing slogans that it is possible to have ever contrived. It is as if Satan himself... thank you. had designed it. It was a tote bag that was emblazoned with the legend, "Keep calm and let it go."
It burns!
Hateful. It's fair to say, I think, that just associating something with Frozen pretty much guarantees success in most instances.
So, Mr. Miliband, we've come up with an idea for Labour to win the election.
Yeah, I know. I've seen the memo, the Frozen Party. It's genius. Replace the word Labour with the word Frozen. Ask the electorate, do you want to build a government? Come on, it's time to vote. That's brilliant.
Mr. Miliband, you do know what Frozen is about.
Yeah, I've seen it. It's great. It's about these two siblings, Anna and Elsa, who start off as, like, best friends. But Elsa can't touch anything without completely wrecking it. So she becomes incredibly unpopular with the people.
Yes.
So she gets cast out into the wilderness, and the only one who can save the day is a sibling who everyone really likes and thinks is cool.
We want to bring back David. Come on, it's time to go.
But I'm the leader of the frozen party.
Let it go.
Anyway, let it go is probably much the same advice you're probably now mentally shoving at your radio. But I say this. Let the storm rage on. Because the whole thing bothers me anyway. Thanks very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mitch Benn.
If God is great, I'm sure he's great enough to take a few jokes. And you are not the hand of holy justice, just a bunch of blokes with guns and no sense of fun. You think that you're on a mission to smite the blasphemers? I know, but just listen to this. Because there's one more mission that's just as important. That mission is taking the piss. And poking fun of things is what we do, and we're still gonna do it, we're still gonna do it. And when you're laughable, we'll laugh at you, and we're still gonna do it, we're still gonna laugh at you. Making fun of sacred cows is vital work, it's true. 'Cause the alternative is living in a world of gits like you. It's a noble tradition of giggling at bishops, prime ministers, princes and kings. And if you don't want the things that you do to be ridiculed, don't do ridiculous things. And you can bomb and you can burn the books, but we're still gonna do it, we're still gonna do it. 'Cause seriously, you take yourself, the funnier you look, and we're still gonna do it, we're still gonna do it. 'Cause our sense of humor keeps us civilized, and we're still gonna do it, we're still gonna do it. So look around you and you'll realize that we're still gonna do it, we're still gonna laugh at you.
Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punt and Hugh Dennis, with John Holmes, Rich Hall, Laura Shavin, Vicky Stone and Mitch Benn. It was written by the cast with additional material from John Hunter, Sarah Campbell, Ed Amson and Tom Coles and Gabby Hutchinson Crouch. It was devised with Bill Dare and the producer was Joseph Nunnery. That was The Now Show from Friday Night Comedy on BBC Radio 4. If you've enjoyed this download, why not visit the Radio 4 website, where you'll find other programmes to download and keep forever, entirely free.